here's this guy, and also Vietsky, and he is a psychic, but he's not an archaeologist.
No, actually, he's a chemical engineer who all his life worked in his own technical scientific profession, but he had he's an extraordinary man. He really is sort of the Polish Edgar Cayce in some ways. He's
very successfully as a chemist too. Not a broke guy by any means.
Oh, no. He was very socially prominent. He was, you know, to this day, if you talk to people from Poland, they know who Ossiewiecki was. A very famous man in his own country, and he was very famous throughout Europe. He worked with Charles Richer, who won the Nobel in medicine. He worked with Gillet, another major researcher. But the work that I recounted particularly, although I tell his whole story, is the work that he did with Stanislaus Poniatowski, who was the leading ethnographer in Poland. And one of the things that's important about this, or that impressed me about this, Ian, and I'm sure as you read the chapter you got the same thing, is that much of this work was done during the period of time that Warsaw was occupied by the Nazis, when you could literally be killed for doing this kind of research.
And what's interesting about that, too, is that in the book there are people who are archaeologists who then dabble in a psychic source for information, and there are people who are, you know, full-time professional archaeologists who also are totally committed to psychic archaeology, and then here you have a guy who's kind of like drafted into it. Archaeology wasn't his field. He just happened to be a really gifted intuitive.
Yes, he was an extraordinarily gifted remote viewer. I mean, there are stories in there that if I had not been able to, in this book, as I'm sure you've noticed, you know, I pinned every single thing down. There's a source for every statement. I mean, Ossiewiecki, the stories are so outrageous that if they hadn't been witnessed by dozens of people and attested to by them, you'd find it hard to believe. I mean, for instance, a typical Ossiewiecki story is he's in a cafe and he's having lunch. He was very social, very socially prominent, and he's having a luncheon. And suddenly, in the middle of the lunch, he leaps up, races out, gets into a taxi, drives across town, now followed by his friends who want to know, who are themselves senior scientists who want to know what's going on. He races across town, pulls into a park, rents a boat, goes out in the boat as this girl is falling out of the boat, and saves her. And they ask him, well, he just knew that she was going to fall out of the boat, that somebody needed to save her, and so there he was.
And that's just one of many colorful stories. I mean, he is a guy who, at cocktail parties, just loves to astound friends with essentially what are, you know, those once-in-a-lifetime party tricks, things you've never seen somebody do before.
Yeah, I mean, one of my favorites was he was very involved with the Tsarist court before the 1918 and before the communists came to power. And a typical sort of Ossiewiecki story is they're at a ball. And you can imagine, here's a Russian ball in a palace, and everybody, all the men are in these glittering uniforms, and all the women are in these ball gowns. I mean, it's all very grand, like something out of a movie. And they get into a discussion about whether it's possible with the mind alone to move an object. And Ossiewiecki says, yes, I can do that. So people are very skeptical, understandably. So they strip him down and put him into, they send out to the local asylum, and they get a straitjacket. And they put him in a straitjacket, and they put him down in the floor of the ballroom. And senior military officers and scientists and members of the court, all these men, all link hands and arms around him so that they've completely, he's in the middle of this circle of people. And a couple of workmen wrestle a statue off of the balustrade of the palace and muscle it into the floor. And all of a sudden, it's sort of sitting across the ballroom from him. And all of a sudden, this guy, he sweats through the straitjacket, his body arches up, and the statue rises up a number of centimeters off of the floor and floats toward them. People became hysterical when they saw this. I mean, it was. They went into what I call reality vertigo. That's when you experience something that's so bizarre you just can't process it.
And there's so many witnesses to this.
Oh yes, yes.
And that's the thing.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I mean, because that's the thing. It wasn't just you're going just that way. It's not just the number. It was their pedigree.
Oh, yes, absolutely. I mean, Ossovietsky worked with many of the leading scientists in Europe. I mean, this is a, first of all, he's a chemist himself. So he's a very successful chemist. He's also a very socially prominent man, and he's a very gregarious, friendly guy. And,
who could just have to move really heavy statues with his mind?
That's right.
I mean, it's just
that's basically it.